This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
It's Worldwide Wave time, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. We love taking you around the globe, one queer story at a time. I'm Matt, and we are back in the studio in a semi-COVID state, and I'm joined tonight by the wonderful Worldwide Wave panel of Shannon.
Hey.
And hello, Paul.
Hello.
A recent report describing discrimination against
LGBT people in this country as pervasive. Same-sex sexual acts can result in fines, prison sentences of up to 20 years, and even caning. And now some members of the government want to make these laws even harsher. Welcome to Malaysia. Yet one gay man has taken on the law, and won. He took his sodomy charge to Malaysia's top court, who found the Islamic provision used was unconstitutional.
To help us understand why Malaysian society seems so unready to even accept LGBT people, we spoke to Dr. Joseph Goh, a senior lecturer in gender studies in the School of Arts and Social Studies at Monash University in Malaysia.
Malaysia's been experiencing another uptick in anti-LGBT sentiment. In January, a plan was taken to Cabinet by the Deputy Minister for Religious Affairs, proposing to enact harsher sentences for same-sex conduct than the current maximum sentence permitted under federal law. That makes the success of a lone gay man, his name withheld to protect him, even more impressive. It took his criminal conviction for sodomy to Malaysia's top court and won in an unanimous ruling. To try and understand what is stopping Malaysia from accepting its LGBT community, we spoke to Dr. Joseph Goh, a senior lecturer in gender studies at Monash University, Malaysia.
I think that Malaysia is a country, as beautiful as it is still trying to discover its own identity. I think it's still trying to discern where it's going post-independence and what it wants to include and exclude in the construction of nationhood. I think it's struggling with that, and because of that, it tries to steer far away from what it perceives to be un-Malaysian. And one of those factors is gender variance and sexual diversity, which it sees as the product of Western values. So when general elections came by, those of us who identify as LGBTIQ were really, really eager, were really hopeful for changes that would finally recognize us for who we were, for who we are. And I use the word recognition purposefully because even before asking for rights, you know, we want to be recognized as citizens, as Malaysians, who may not fall into the cisnormative and heteronormative categories, but are every bit as Malaysian as everyone else. We were told some years ago that there was no constitutional protection for LGBTIQ people. And what it really means is that there is no constitutional identity for us. And the irony of it is that while we are Malaysian, we are also non-Malaysians by virtue of our gender and sexual identities.
So what are the main issues that somebody from... I mean, it's a very diverse community, LGBTIQ community. It's very, very diverse. So what are the main issues that we are facing in Malaysia?
Along with the idea of an imagined Malaysianness, is also the idea of how everything fits into place, including in the realm of gender and sexuality. sometime back there was a comment made that a woman's role is in the kitchen, and a woman's role is to bring up children. You know, she's the linchpin in a family. And that comment was made by a politician. Now, make no mistake, we've made great strides in the fight for women's rights in the country. And I salute the very many, many women and men activists and transgender activists who have canvassed rights of women and LGBTIQ people in Malaysia. But every now and again, you get this startling remark made that really sets us back by a few years. And I think that that comment captures the general population's idea, or rather the general population's sense of familiarity and comfort with the country and where they belong in the country. I think that that sense of belongingness requires certain placeholders of gender and sexuality where everybody knows who everybody is and knows everybody's place. When that is rattled, when people are not normative in terms of being men and women or anything in between, that raises a lot of issues that people have no recourse to. The fact that certain actions, certain expressions of gender and sexuality are considered illegal in the country and therefore can be criminalized means that people, they don't have very many avenues for discussion and concrete expressions based on those discussions.
So you were talking about the discretion, the fact of not having that place in the society, and that's a big issue. So what is the day-to-day life of a member of the community?
I don't want to portray Malaysia as a country where people are constantly looking over their shoulders and living in fear. And I say this not just because I would like people to visit Malaysia. I don't represent any tourist company or the Ministry of Tourism, but it is a good place to live in. I was born here, and I love living here, despite the frustrations. I'm constantly reminded that I am a migrant, even though I'm a third-generation Malaysian-born person of Chinese descent. And, you know, if you shake the tree hard enough, you'll find other ethnicities in my family line. So this hybridity that I find in myself, I see also in other Malaysians. And I constantly wonder why this hybridity does not also encompass gender and sexuality. But to answer your question, I think the average Malaysian doesn't really care. If you're gay or you're lesbian, you're transgender. I work with people of all sorts of sexual orientations and gender identities. And people are generally okay with that. It's not a problem. I think it becomes a problem when it becomes politicized. And when it becomes politicized, especially when, you know, general elections come by, it becomes an issue and it blows up. And I think that a lot of Malaysians have found ways to circumvent legalities that prevent them from being who they are. And they have found these ways, these strategies, to be very meaningful. The internet has been a great resource for Malaysians in trying to discover who they are and what their rights are in the country. We've also found safe spaces to be who we are, to be accepted. I believe that for many Malaysians, it's love that ultimately trumps everything else. A woman might find that her son is transgender. A man might find that his daughter is a lesbian. And, you know, there are some parents who try to get their children to go for counselling. And there are parents who seek reparative therapy for their kids. But by and large, I think most Malaysians love their children and want to shield them from societal disapproval. And perhaps that's what makes them so protective and make them get their children to go for reparative therapy. But at the end of the day, I believe that Malaysians love their children enough to embrace that part of their identity.
So you mean that when it touches us, it's very different that's when it's portrayed in society, a bit like othering. So it's... when it's the other people are treated differently when it's your loved one. Is that really what happens?
I have seen those cases in my life. Yeah, it's happening. But of course, you know, you do get some conservative circles who just cannot accept that there are people who are different. But these are also people who might not accept any form of difference in other people, not just in the area of gender and sexuality. But at the end of the day, they are going to look at who we are as colleagues, as friends, as relatives, as fellow Malaysians. They might be dissatisfied with how we live our lives or some of our beliefs or our values. But I think they can put that aside and look at who we are and interact with us on that level. Maybe that's enough. You know, I don't think everybody should be accepting of everyone simply on the superficial level where, oh, I have to accept people, therefore I will accept people. I think we struggle through that and we will continue to struggle through that. But where can we come to a point where we can say, look, I'm not going to accept everything that you're going to say to me, and I don't necessarily approve of all your values and your belief systems, but I'm not going to let that stand in the way. I'm going to see you as a fellow human being.
That's Dr. Joseph Goh from Monash University in Malaysia with us on Joy 94.9. I found that really insightful, this whole idea of the link between sexuality and national identity. It's not really something that I had thought about before. And his words struck me there, saying he's non-Malaysian by virtue of his sexual identity. So as much as he's third generation Malaysian, because he's gay, he's not considered Malaysian. It's a really interesting way of looking at, you know, how society views the LGBT population in Malaysia.
Yeah, that's very strange. Well, an unusual way of looking at it, to be classed as not having the nationality in the eyes of other members of that community just because of your sexuality. I mean, he also goes on and says that even though he's third generation, because he's third generation Chinese, he still isn't accepted as Malaysian either.
Yeah, it's interesting because there are also like ministers in Malaysia, right? Like government ministers who have said there are no LGBT Malaysian people. And so I wonder if that's, you know, like a part of that, I mean, obviously you have countries that just say gay people don't exist here, and yeah, it's obviously just
complete denial.
Just complete denial of gay people as like just people. But I wonder if that also plays into it a bit of them going, well, they're not Malaysian.
Yeah, it's his approach to recognition before rights. So it's really what he's advocating for is a base level. You know, just notice us and accept us. You know, that the rights thing comes later.
Well, you've seen that before where other countries have got the rights, they've got the legislation, but the society doesn't accept. So I think that's probably actually the more sensible approach, is to get the recognition and acceptance first and then go for the rights.
We've also seen here, as in many other countries, this relationship between progress on LGBT rights and progress on women's rights. Kind of running in parallel. So it must be very challenging for women in the communities as well, coming up with these same frustrations in trying to get acceptance from from society.
It does seem to be slow on the acceptance field for lots of aspects of the society.
Yeah, I mean, countries that discriminate against LGBT people, I mean, you know, they also commonly don't love women.
Coming up, we find out what the secret is to getting by in daily life as an LGBT person in Malaysia. You're listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Turn is on and we'll turn it out. Joy.
This is Taya Braun, Legal Director of the Human Dignity Trust on Worldwide Ways.
Tonight we are in Malaysia. I'd actually be really interested if there's any listeners out there who have travelled to Malaysia and how they felt being LGBT. Did they not show affection? Did they sort of, you know, were they very careful in what they said and did?
Well, returning to Malaysia, it may just be that the only way to get progress on LGBT rights is through the courts. And one brave gay man who has challenged his sodomy charge under colonial era laws and won has shown that change can happen. As senior lecturer in gender studies, Dr. Joseph Goh from Monash University, Malaysia, spends his days trying to unpack sexuality and gender identity in Malaysian society. We discuss with Joseph how the mere perception that you are gay can change your acceptance.
I've seen the diversity of LGBTIQ people in the country and how they are treated differently. The main difference in treatment towards LGBTIQ people, I believe, is based on how people are perceived in terms of their alignment to accepted and non-accepted norms in the country. Malaysia is a very patriarchal, masculinist country. One only has to look at the makeup of the previous political regime to realize how male it is. But the notion of passing helps me to understand why certain groups of LGBTIQ people are treated better than others. Men and women who identify as gay and lesbian tend to get by more easily in society, I believe. Now, when having said that, I have to qualify it by saying I'm not making this statement as a blanket statement. This is not a blanket statement. But generally, I see lesbian women and gay men getting by in society when they conform to gender roles and gender expectations. So a gay man who is manly or a lesbian woman who is feminine would not cause a lot of issues or will not raise a lot of questions as long as they don't reveal their sexual orientation. But once you get a woman who is acting in a more masculine way or a man who is, you know, acting in a feminine way, she or he gets slapped with the lesbian and gay label, and that becomes a problem. But I believe that it is the transgender women who bear the brunt of the government's disapproval. Because in a transgender woman in Malaysia, or a matnya, we see a configuration of biology and gender expression and gender identity that really rails against the whole masculinist and patriarchal nature of Malaysia. And because of that, they've been exposed to a lot of brutality. Very soon after the general elections in 2018, a maknya in the Malaysian state of Negeri Sembilan was picked on by a group of young people and beaten up with crash helmets. And when they were asked why they did it, they answered, "Because we felt like doing it." So when you get that situation happening, you tend to wonder if this is really a new Malaysia. I would say that transgender women, and to a lesser extent, transgender men, are treated much worse than gay men and lesbian women, bisexual people, who are able to evade the public gaze.
That's Dr. Joseph Goh in Malaysia with us on Joy 94.9.
And the reason we're in Malaysia tonight is that there has been, just in the last couple of days, a landmark ruling in Malaysia's highest court, where a Muslim man, and this is one of the more significant things about this story, that it's a Muslim man that took this to the highest court. He was arrested in the state of Selangor for attempting gay sex, the old sodomy, colonial era sodomy laws. He denied the allegations, but took his case to the court and was successful in a unanimous decision. So basically the court said that the state did not have the constitutional power to enact this law under Islamic laws against him. So he was facing, you know, caning and jail. So it's a quite a significant decision. Now, his identity has been protected. So we would have loved to have chatted to him about taking this on, but we couldn't. So Dr. Joseph Goh is giving us some really good insights here about Malaysia. That case where he was arrested, there are other people who are arrested in the same raid, as raids often happen there, and they are in jail. So it's a really can be quite a fraught situation.
So was he in one of the areas where Sharia law applies?
I don't know enough about Selangor State to see if that's a particular. There seems to be indications of that. So it is arguing that essentially it's kind of a religious-driven law.
And I know from our previous discussions on this on different shows is that our listeners can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the law only applies to Muslims, as in the Sharia law that is applied only applies to Muslim
men.
Malaysians.
Yep.
That's the word I was trying to get out.
Right. Yeah. Some interesting things there from Joseph as well. The idea of passing, you get by, which is a term we often hear from the trans community, but it's just an everyday thing of, you know, if you conform to those norms of gender norms, then you'll get, and you don't tell anybody you're gay or lesbian, you'll get by fine.
Because you fit in.
But
should we have to fit in? That's the question.
No, and trans women, as many places in the world, are the worst off there because it is the opposite to that masculine stereotype which they're embracing. Coming up on Joy 94.9, we have a look at how the broader Asia region impacts Malaysia's LGBT rights. This is Worldwide Wave.
What's happening? Download the Joy app today.
Hello, this is Wolfgang from Conchita Wurst City, which is Vienna in Austria. You're listening to Worldwide Wave from Joy 94.9.
It's the show that takes you around the globe, one queer story at a time, Worldwide Wave. And tonight we're lifting the lid on the secret, on the state of Malaysia. We'd like to say a special hello to everyone who's listening to us on podcasts. You can subscribe to receive our podcasts automatically either at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or on iTunes or whatever your favourite podcast platform happens to be. And don't forget to leave us a review.
And you can also message us here in the studio, just like Amelia has. Amelia is from the University of Melbourne Student Union Queer Department. There's been a bit of transphobia up on reported transphobia at the University of Melbourne. They're holding a snap rally tomorrow and inviting everybody to come along, 1 p.m. at the University of Melbourne campus. Good luck with that one. We love a bit of advocacy, even right here in our own backyard. And just before we go on to this weekend, I know it's all a bit weird at the moment with, you know, you don't know what's up and whether you can go places. Well, this weekend is the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras and Joy 94.9. We are back there yet again. We've been doing the broadcasts up there for years. The team will be there for a night of glitter and rainbows. We'll be crossing up to the parade, chatting to community organisations and playing tons of music all night. So it's this Saturday, 6 p.m, right here on Joy 94.9, and don't miss it. And in May last year, a man filed a challenge in the Federal Court of Malaysia, the highest court of the land, against the Islamic laws banning intercourse against the order of nature. It's in Selangor State. Last week, the ruling came through in a unanimous decision. The Federal Court ruled that Selangor State's laws which made unnatural sex a Sharia offence, were invalid as it contradicted the federal constitution. Our guest tonight, Dr. Joseph Goh from Melbourne University's Malaysia campus, studies gender identity in Asia. With some very positive progress on LGBT rights across Asia and also some very regressive ones, we asked Joseph how the Asia region impacts LGBT rights in Malaysia.
I've heard a lot of anecdotal reasons behind these developments in Indonesia, especially in Aceh and in Brunei. And it's difficult to draw a correlation between the governmental disapproval on LGBTIQ issues between any country. I think it might be safe to assume that, like Malaysia, Indonesia and Brunei, both countries situated in Southeast Asia like Malaysia, are also trying to discover who they are. And when a country is trying to define and redefine itself, it tends to fall back on a larger system upon which it can base its ideas. So I think it is a drive for identity, but a drive for identity that says I'm better than everyone else, or at least I'm on equal standing with everyone else. And sometimes the pendulum swings a bit too far to the other end.
Yeah. And maybe on the more positive note, very recently Taiwan has legalized same-sex unions. Do you think that could have an influence on what's happening in Malaysia, or is it a bit too far? Or
Taiwan is the first country in Asia to legalize same-sex marriage, and I was very impressed that the activists that pressed ahead on the fight for same-sex marriage said, we will fight for nothing less than marriage. We don't want unions, we don't want anything that parodies marriage, we want marriage. I don't think Malaysia is going to take that up anytime soon. The Malaysian activist Pang Kee Tek and I came to a conclusion that Malaysians have not come to a point where we are fighting for same-sex marriage rights. We are fighting for the right to be protected, the right for security, the right for acknowledgement, the right for recognition in a country that sees us as an embarrassment. Same-sex marriage is a wonderful thing. It recognizes that people are allowed to publicly profess the love they have for the people whom they love, gender and sexuality notwithstanding. But I think we have a long way to go as a country that's still trying to understand itself, a country that still hangs on to Section 377A, B, and C in its penal code, a country that continues to come up with public opinions on gender and sexuality that dismisses certain sexual identities and gender identities and enshrines them legally and non-legally. I don't think that's what we're fighting for. I don't think we want that yet. So does same-sex marriage in Taiwan have an influence on us? Time will tell, but as yet, perhaps not. Perhaps right now, the best that I can hope for is that Malaysia can open its eyes and see that being gender variant and sexually diverse is not a Western thing, whatever Western thing means. It's a people thing. And if an Asian country like Taiwan can show itself to be courageous enough to go ahead, to forge ahead with such a radical decision, perhaps Malaysia can finally say, oh, maybe we've got it not all right. And maybe they can say, perhaps we can reconsider what we're doing and what we've been saying. I've mentioned a few issues on gender and sexuality in the country, and I've mentioned a few names of my leaders. I implore these leaders to take heed of who we are and what we say. My remarks are not meant as any form of belittlement or criticism, but as a gentle reminder of the difference that formed this country, the very many factors that came about that made it possible for us to gain our independence in 1957, how we worked together as a group of very different people from different countries who finally became Malaysians to build up the economy, to build up the political structure in the country, and to consider that gender and sexual identities are also building blocks of the country that must be recognized for what they are.
That's Dr. Joseph Goh from Monash University's Malaysia campus, who lectures and presents in gender studies. This interesting parallels to some countries. He was sort of drawing the same parallels with Indonesia and Brunei about them sort of finding their identities and how sexuality might sort of not fit in with that, and that's why they're struggling. There's probably a few other issues in there with, you know, religion playing a good part in some of those countries.
Isn't Brunei the one that was intending to bring the death penalty and then...
Yes.
They haven't...
They've backtracked on that. They said they're not going to do the death penalty, but stonings are okay. Small wins. Fighting for the right to be protected, to be recognised, to be acknowledged. So they're not fighting for the right for marriage equality. And I think that's quite important in a lot of these countries. When it gets politicised, the political leaders are the ones saying it's the small end of the wedge. If we give them these small rights here, they'll want marriage. And they really use marriage as a wedge tactic to push their political will.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you see that, you know, not in a, in, well, still in a fair few countries.
In fact, Shannon, you mentioned, you reminded us actually that Malaysia's got a particular history of this, of using LGBT issues as a weapon in politics with the former opposition leader.
Yes, the former opposition leader, Anwar Ibrahim, he was jailed under sodomy laws for, you know, for many years. He doesn't identify as LGBT, but they, you know, kind of use that law, you know, just to really don't mean to find a reason to arrest him and to jail him, and they did for a long time.
Yeah, and that final thought, a difference created Malaysia, is quite an interesting insight, which I probably didn't appreciate, but perhaps they can recognise the difference within their own communities and the LGBT communities, and that might take Malaysia forward. We'll keep an eye on things there in Malaysia for you.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, this is André Duplessis from the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association, speaking from Geneva on the World Wide Wave.
And a huge thank you to Dr. Joseph Goh, a senior lecturer in gender studies at Monash University, Malaysia.
And we would like to say thank you to everyone who interacted with us on Facebook. There, that's Liz, Anthony, Linda, Nicole, Richard and a heap more. Now, you can find us on Facebook. It's very easy. It's W3Joy.
And we do post stories from around the world throughout the week, so you can keep up to date with LGBT international affairs. Big thank you to the team that makes that happen, Dean, our social media master, and our podcaster, Peter. We'll catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.